Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Steven and I are together in Cleveland after a weird week for me, travel-wise, but I'm back in town. Thanks for picking me up at the airport, by the way. You picked me up at the airport late night on Thursday.
Yeah.
It was very much appreciated. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Just, I feel good. Got some good sleep last night. Wasn't doing any late night part-time work stuff, so, you know, with our company, we're forging along. We got some good projects in the pipeline that I've told you about. But it's still not at a point where it's making money yet. So I'm doing a lot of side hustle gigs from, you know, DoorDash to private security to working for a sketchy dude doing sketchy stuff.
Yeah, you know, you don't necessarily want to broadcast that, do you?
It's fine.
All right, fine, whatever.
Yeah. You know, to doing some stuff, working with some kids and doing some different things. So I keep myself occupied, keeping a little money coming up, but got some good rest this weekend, so I feel good and have been out all day kind of taking advantage of that energy on the weekends. And, you know, so I was going to build a fence, and then it snowed today.
Keep your psycho dogs in check?
Yes, yes, that is why. And then I realized I know nothing about building a fence. And if you remember the last time I tried a home construction project where I knew nothing about it, trying to build out my patio, I remember I took all the bricks out of the patio and then I put them back and then I took them out again. And then
didn't I get dragged into this somehow, like helping you with pavers and shit?
Yes, yes. You did help me move the pavers, like the last of the pavers the one day. And then I ended up putting all the pavers back in place because I got annoyed because I had no idea how to grade my yard so that I could pour the concrete for the patio. And then
you ended up hiring a pro, as I recall.
Yeah, I got one of the guys from my gym. He poured it for me, and my patio's nice. He
did your patio's awesome. Yeah,
he did a great job. Way better than whatever the hell I thought my plan was. And so I thought about that while I was at Lowe's trying to assemble everything I needed to build this fence to keep my dogs in. And I said, you know what? I've got a temporary fence there now. And I said, let me call some places. And one of the places was open today, which is why I was a little bit late. And they said, why don't you come on in? And then, like, some of the other places I had called before, it was, like, going to be, like, $3,500 for 18 feet of fence, which was insane.
Seems exorbitant, yeah.
But this place quoted me at $1,400. Said it'd only be a couple days, and they would get me on the schedule for this month. And I said, well, what if I build it myself? Could I buy the materials from you? And they said, have you ever done it before? And I said, no. And they said, why don't you just let us do it? Like, by the time you buy the materials, you know, you're going to spend $900, and then you might as well spend the extra $500 just to have us do it and save you the headache. And I said,
well, I appreciate them for doing that, because I know somehow I've been dragged in.
No, because listen,
Baltimore.
you're out of town.
I am.
So I can't use you as my labor force as much.
Which you have in the past, which is all good.
But
all
I do most of the labor.
Using the term heavy lifting, yeah, it's on you. All right, we're going inside baseball. I did not see the State of the Union. You warned me about, what was her name?
Kate Britt.
Kate Britt, the junior senator from Alabama.
Yes.
Who spoke from her kitchen. Now, I gotta say, after seeing the response, when I actually watched it, it was almost disappointing because it wasn't as bad as I was.
Yeah, I mean, like, the problem is, so I watched it live, right? And it's just like her voice, her inflection, some of the stuff that she was talking about, like, we'll get into it. But, you know, listen, I watched the State of the Union, and Biden did pretty good. He hit some key points about, you know, building the infrastructure up and highlighting, you know, his administration's wins. He did a good job of talking about, you know, creating more, you know, financial stability for the middle class. you know, addressing, you know, the border crisis and like, look, you know, it's got to be bipartisan. We got to stop this partisan stuff. We want to get this done. It is an issue. And, you know, I thought he did good. And you know, he looked old and he, because he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, like there's not much they could do to fight that. And I think for something like this where you know it's coming, you've got time to prepare, you've got time to practice and everything else, like he's still going to do good in those scenarios. He didn't go off script with some of the weird stories that he's done in the past about corn pop and his, you know, black people's hair and the swimming hole and all that, all those weird stories he can get into to show that, you know, he's been down with the brothers for his whole life and all that bullshit. He didn't do that as much in this one. And I thought he did a relatively good job. He did what they, you know, Democrats this time did what they needed to do. And they have to continue, I think, to really press the administration, the wins that they've had. But then they also can't rest on that. They really have to be aggressive in talking about, like, realistic things that they can achieve over the next 4 years. And they really have to get people, and it's not just about getting Biden back in office. It is to a degree, right? But it, what's more important is that you, is that the Democrats motivate people to go out and vote down the ticket, right? So that you can, you know, make a run at getting, you know, more control over the House. You know, take a, you know, looking at the senators that are up for reelection, you know, getting more Democratic senators in there, maybe being able to take over the Senate as well, so that you, because the Republicans are now the party of Trump, fully obstructionist. If their guy isn't in the White House, then they're not going to, you know, they don't want to work to solve any problems. They just want to make sure that they, you know, just throw a wrench in any plans that the Democrats have. So the only way to really deal with that at this point is you're not going to get any more you're not going to get rational people on the Republican side at this point, right? Like they're all going to, you know, if they're getting support from the RNC, then they're going to be, you know, Trump loyalists, and Trump loyalists are going to be obstructionists to, you know, any plans that the Democrats have or that Biden would have once he gets into office. So you're going to have to beat them down the ticket, get control, you know, get more distance so that you can rely on your Democratic votes to win stuff in the House. And then you're also going to need to make a real push to get control of the Senate. Now, it's a tough map, but again, if you can hold and then you can get, you know, you just need, I think, 3 or 4, right, Republican senators this time around, senators on the Democratic side this time around. That's a big ask given some of the states that are up, but that's got to be the mission. And the only way is just to hammer, right, the message of what you've done that's worth reelecting, you know, getting these people in the office for again, and then what you're going to do. And it needs to be reasonable. Don't tell me you're gonna cure cancer and you're gonna legalize weed and tell me what you can realistically do. And it needs to have an impact on people's wallets every day. Because me and you talked about, you know, how we see the presidential election, and more and more I'm leaning towards, I think Biden can win this thing. I wasn't confident before, but the more I think about it right now, we're getting, like, the Republican primary is really the only thing going on. We know that Trump has won that nomination, essentially. Nikki Haley has dropped out. It's going to be Trump versus Biden. I'm still holding out hope that Nikki Haley decides to run as an independent, you know, because if she gives people other options. But I think realistically, if she, assuming she's not going to, or assuming she does and it's not effective, I think Biden can win this election. But for it to make sense, like, you got to have, you know, complete control of the House, where you really can't be stifled by Republicans, and you have to make a push for the Senate, even though it doesn't look good. If you can at least keep it where it's at in the Senate and get better control in the House, you know, more numbers on your side, I think that's the way to go. And I think the State of the Union was a good start going into November.
I think it's important for anyone listening to us for the first time. you have no trouble criticizing Joe Biden. And you've been a flat out, I mean, a critic is fair. And for justifiable reasons, I get you. It seems like he came out of this pretty strong. I watched the Republican response, and it was mocked up and down the street. So I was watching, it ended up being a disappointment to me because I was expecting Kate Britt to literally, like, fumble through the kitchen, which essentially she did, just not to the degree I was expecting.
Yeah, I mean, look, her response, she's focusing on the culture war where MAGA is really, taken root, right?
Sure.
Like, talking about, she really kind of focused on a lot of your family value issues, trans, the threat of trans people and the threat of illegal immigration and, having all the kids and everything. One of the stories she told as it relates to immigration, talking about, this woman that had told her this just horrible story about being sex trafficked, right, ends up getting fact-checked. So she made it seem like someone pulled her aside when she was down at the border and told her this story about being sex trafficked. And, it happened. Kate Britt made it seem like it's something that happened in the U.S. at the border. And this is why we have to, get control over illegal immigration. Well, the story gets fact-checked. And this woman, Jacinta, I forget her name, her last name, she's an activist. And she talks about her experience being sex trafficked and, basically being kidnapped and then moved around as a sex worker. Now, this happened, right, because this woman has told this story multiple times. And so if you go back and you listen to her story about what happened to her, it happened between 2004 and 2008, okay? So this is during G.W. Bush's term, right? But it also happened in Mexico, right? She got kidnapped in Mexico, got sent to Guadalajara, ended up in Mexico City, has this whole thing how she fights and she gets out, and then she, now she's an activist, just talking about more about, like, human trafficking, sex trafficking, how the cartels influence it and everything else and how immigration plays into it. But what happened to her didn't happen at the border. It didn't happen in the United States. It happened in Mexico. We don't have control over that.
It didn't happen under Joe Biden.
It did exactly. It didn't happen under Joe Biden. It didn't happen in the U.S. And it didn't. It hasn't. It was, 15 years ago, almost 20 years ago that this happened. And that time difference, why it matters again, is that she's trying to tie it to Joe Biden and this administration, what they're not doing on immigration. But what happened to her had nothing to do with immigration. It had nothing to do with Joe Biden. It had nothing to do with the United States. Other than
that, it's completely irrelevant.
Right. Other than whatever our role is with the cartels in Mexico. There were other things that could have been fact checked about her response that weren't accurate or true or what have you. And it was a bad response that even you saw the responses from other Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
Like, people who are just like, look, I'm a Trump supporter, but come on, what is going on with, like, I mean, like, these are responses from, GOP, whether they're candidates or establishment, that are just like, this is insane. Seeing that response and, people's response in general to her response to the State of the Union is what kind of leads me down this road that, our country may have more sense than I've been giving it credit for, because if you're just focused on Twitter or X and you're just looking at social media, then you feel like Trump's got this thing going away, right? And then you've got all the polls, but how accurate are the polls, right? Like, the polls have kind of lost some of their luster because they just have not been really true to what's going on in a lot of instances. Like 538 has really fallen off the map because they're just, you can't trust these polls. It's not necessarily the fault of the polling companies, but, the RNC, the DNC now understand how they work, and they're manipulating how a lot of this stuff is going. And then you've got a lot of partisan companies that are, hey, we're just objective pollsters, but really they're on one side or the other trying to get a certain message out through their polling.
Oh, and by the way, the RNC just inserted a new leader.
Who does?
Laura Trump.
Oh.
Right?
Oh.
Yeah. Shocking.
Oh.
And
we knew that this was coming.
We did. You know, you put this as something we should talk about like a couple weeks ago, and it didn't come to fruition until this week. Yep. But she is now the head of the RNC. I mean, when you say
I think she's like the co-chair or something like that.
Is it? Okay.
Either way.
The point is, you're saying it's now the party of Trump. It is now literally the party of Trump.
Right, with a Trump at the head. And she's already come out and said, like, look, all we're pushing all every dollar towards Trump. You know, now, there'll be some money for down ticket, but that's another thing. Like, Democrats should be like, great, go ahead. Right, like he's on shaky ground as it is with his 91 indictments and all this other stuff.
All the financial commitments from legal settlements that are kicking him in the nuts, yeah.
Not to mention just some of the batshit crazy shit that's coming out of him, going back to the State of the Union and everything else. So, you know, Democrats should look at that as like, look, if they're going to pump all their money into Trump, then we need to go, you know, obviously we have to go heavy with Biden, but we also need to really look at pushing down ticket. Right, looking at some of these battleground states and really going hard with the Democratic candidates and spending money on advertising every which way, shape, and form, TV, you know, grassroots, on the ground, small donations, big donations, everything you can do to really push and at minimum, like I said, get control, you know, get Biden back in the White House. It does hurt me to say it because I just...
I'm not a fan,
but it's what needs to happen at this point, you know. And it's more important to go down the ticket and make sure you get those in, because then if you do, like I said, if you've got control of the House, you've got Biden in the White House, and you've got firm control of the House, then you know you can start to get some things through.
So I am gonna put this on you, and then I'm gonna jump on it myself and say, if you are running Trump's campaign, what is your message? If you're running Biden's campaign, what is your message? What are you pushing? I have very strong... I don't even know if I can do a Trump... pretend to be Trump's campaign manager. Because the message is what it is.
If I'm running Trump's campaign, I'm doing what I've been doing to this point. You've got a strong base. You know exactly what they want to hear. You know how they want to hear it. So I wouldn't change course much. Now I would tell him to rein in some of the crazy talk and just focus on the core of their message, which is a lot of the cultural stuff, because it worked for him. They should continue to hammer the border. They should continue to ignore the fact that they didn't pass the border bill, the bipartisan border bill. There's not much that they really need to change. On the DNC side, it's what I said earlier. You know, you really want to focus on what you've done that has helped people, right, and be able to show it. You know, get Katie Porter out there with her whiteboard and show what they've done. But then on the flip side, they also have to talk about what they're going to do, and there need to be realistic solutions that they're putting out there on the table that people can get behind. And recognize that those things are going to need to be, some of those things are going to need to be bipartisan. That they're going to need to, they're going to have to make some concessions, right? But that's the way that I would go about it if I were the DNC, not just for Biden, right? It starts with him, but that, you know, hammer the message home, and I would craft very specific messages for the various different regions that are out there. Right, what we need in Ohio may not be what they need in California. In a West Virginia or a Kentucky or, you know, some of those other places. And they really have to get home to the root issues in some of these different places, and you know, have, you know, big picture sort of solutions, even though, you know, the details need to be crafted later. And then if you do win, then you need to go and try to do the best that you can to follow through with as much of that as you can, which these are all big asks with a government that has not been effective in doing a lot of that sort of thing. But at some point, that can be your winning message that can carry you through this thing and hopefully get you through the Trump craze.
if I'm running the Biden campaign, again, Trump thing, I've got nothing to add because it is what it is. It's culture war. It's whatever. If I'm running the Biden campaign, I've got John Kelly and Mark Milley on a loop on Fox News, on Newsmax. I'm watching John Kelly say, this man is unfit to serve. He flat out shit on the military when he said, I'm not going to this cemetery in France because it's filled with losers. Because the number of people I talk to who are rah-rah military, who have no idea that he said those things. And when I say, how, you know, I talked last week about how I'm in a hotel with a bunch of right-wingers and two guys who were, one was a Marine, one was in the Army. And I didn't push this hard at all, but it was clear that they were, you know, military born and raised. And the shit he said is revolting. I mean, like this cemetery where the men who died in Normandy, and he said, why would I go there? It's filled with losers. If any presidential candidate was caught on tape saying that, their career is over. And this guy is getting his, you know, ass kissed by, you know, the right wing or the, you know, pro-military folks. Like, listen to what he said. And every time I quote this, they're like, oh, he didn't say that. What's your source? My source is John Kelly. Retired Marine General, former Chief of Staff, John Kelly, heard him say that. When it first came out in 2020, he deflected. He has subsequently come out and said, yes, he said that, and this man is unfit to serve. Mark Milley and John Kelly are on every commercial I'm running. I'm not trying to push my agenda. I'm saying, here's what this guy said. Here's what people are saying.
Another thing you could do is you could literally just go through the number of people that he fired, right, in his first administration, because there is a laundry list, right, and go to their comments after, right? I mean, sure. Like, there is a laundry list of people who all said essentially the same thing, that the guy is out of control, and he only listens to people that say things that he want to hear. Like, I would go through all that, right?
Yes.
Like, from Kelly to Milley to...
Hutchinson something Hutchinson. What was her name?
I mean, all of them.
She was, like, a high-ranking person. She's the one who said, like, he wanted to drive the presidential limo to the Capitol on January 6th to rally the folks storming the Capitol. So anyone who says, you know, oh, no, this was Antifa, fuck right off.
Yeah, Hicks, all these other, I mean, like, there's all the, there's so, you
Cassandra
know.
Cassandra Hutchinson, I think.
Yeah, Rex Tillerson, you know, you can go down the list of all these different people, you know, like you said, put all that stuff on a loop, right? You could just have a whole 30-second spot of, you know, quotes of people that Trump fired who, you know, gave you insight as to what was going on. I would go to that article that we read with that crazy meeting they had. Remember?
Oh, geez.
Where the one dude was going to fight. He was going to fight Mike Flynn, and then the guy told Mike Flynn to sit down, and Mike Flynn sat down, and Trump went and got a burger with ketchup. Like, it was this wild story. Like,
I totally forgot about that. Think about that. That happened in the fucking Oval Office.
In the West Wing, and this is right after the election. This is before January 6th. It's a wild story. I think it's on Axios, but like, if you read it, you're like, Jesus Christ. Like, I would have quotes from that out there. Like, and again, going to how the Democrat, like, they need to, again, promote what good they've done, what good they're going to do, but then they also need to highlight where this guy has been called out for being a sociopath and, you know, not as loyal to the country as you know, as he makes it out to be. And you know, all the hypocrisy, all the lies and all the bullshit, I would put it all out there, including the 91 indictments and why he's being indicted, like, specifically, you know, talking to, like, look, he tried, you know, campaign finance fraud on this one, and this one he was trying to get more votes in Georgia that he didn't have, and, you know, his people are going to say...
Mr. Family Values, oh, by the way, you paid off a fucking porn star that you banged.
Right. All that stuff, right? Like, this is not a situation where you take the high road, you have to go out, you have to go after.
100%.
But you, it's like, look, we're not making stuff up. We're literally taking quotes and we're taking things that happened that are all verifiable, and we're just reminding you, this is what you're going to be putting back in the White House if you cast your vote for Trump.
100%. And exactly. One of the flaws of the Democratic Party for years has been they try to tiptoe around, like when I'm going to bring back the John Kerry goose hunting thing. Like, they want to show him as a hunter and a sportsman and outdoorsman, but they don't want him carrying a dead animal because they're worried about offending people. Fuck that.
Yep.
Just have a dead goose in your fucking teeth. You know, you can't tiptoe. Gotta throw punches. Speaking of throwing punches, it's not on the board, but I need to talk about this. We need to talk about this.
Yes. Mike Tyson, Jake Paul. Yes, we will. You know, going back to the State of the Union response, Kate Britt, a couple things. One, I'm not a big SNL fan, but Scarlett Johansson was on SNL.
Watching that when you called me right before we started recording.
I mean, it was really good. Worth the watch, especially if you did watch the State of the Union response. But, you know, Tommy Tuberville, he comes up a lot just because he's such a twat in the Senate in Alabama. But he came out and he said that they chose Kate Britt because she's a housewife. Now, Kate Britt, as you said, she is a junior senator from Alabama, right? She is a senator, Tommy, same job that you have, right? She is not a housewife. This woman has a real job, and even if she's bad at it, it's still her job. She is not just a housewife sitting at home doing homemaking, cleaning, baking, taking care of the kids. Like, you know, as a senator, she's got to be in the capital of the U.S., and she's got to be out and about amongst her jurisdiction and everything else. Like, I thought it was, you know, a really shitty comment for him, no matter how bad her State of the Union or whatever you think about her politics. She is not just a housewife. And, you know, I want to highlight that. Again, if there's any independents, if we have any independent women, like, think about what he said about a woman in his party who has the same job as he does and how he views her. Like, that's the element. Now, that sort of, you know, sort of misogyny is...
By the way, you were a football coach before you were a senator. So, good for you, but...
Right.
You know...
You know, I mean... Look. He was a football coach, but it's not like he was a football coach at Polk High. I mean, he was...
Auburn's a like, major like, program.
Head coach at a major football program is... You are the CEO of a multi, you know, $100 million entity, especially at Auburn. But you're right. He was a football coach. So, you know, I mean, and that goes back to some of his, you know, his reasoning. You know, he said, oh, I was a football coach. I dealt with stuff. I worked these long days and these guys don't do anything. These generals, they just sit around in offices and they got all these people doing stuff for him. Like, it was so disrespectful. You know, everything about Tommy Tuberville, I didn't like him when he was at Auburn. You know, I got a letter from Auburn, and I just remember looking at that guy's face. I was like, I wouldn't want to play for him. And I actually played with a guy in college, Rob, my boy Rob Williams. He's from Chicago. He played at Auburn and left because he hated Tommy Tuberville. He said he was just a complete asshole, you know, gave very, you know, racist vibes, even though a majority of his players were black. You had brought to me, like, how do these black players continue and go and play for guys like this? At the end of the day, big-time college football is big-time college football, and you're going there, like, because the coach is going to come in, and he's going to tell you everything that you want to hear. He's going to say he's going to take care of you and going to make sure that you take good classes and that you graduate, and education is the number one priority, and he's going to treat you like he would treat his own sons, all that other stuff. And then the first day you get there, he's probably going to tell you that you're a piece of shit, you're nothing, and if you want to play, you got to earn your way on. I know from experience, because that's how it goes down, right? They say all these sweet things to you in the house, and then they get you there, and then all of a sudden, it's all piss and vinegar. Now, typically, guys, you know, step up to the challenge, because that's the culture of football. You know, you tear people down to build them back up like you do in the military. So guys just expect the head coaches to be assholes, and then sometimes you get a good head coach who does care. You know, and I was blessed to have, you know, Bob Sutton, maybe not a great coach at West Point, but he genuinely cared about every single one of his players, right? He cared about me. He cared when I told him I was going to leave. He understood, and he helped me, and he worked with me. When I get to UMass, I have Mark Whipple, complete psycho, but Mark Whipple cared about me, still cares about me, right? You know, when I was trying to get jobs in the NFL, I was able to use his name in those instances. It didn't work out, but I'm very fortunate that I had coaches who may have said some really shitty things, like I won't say which coach said that I should have been an abortion because I missed a pass, but you hear things like that. But then those same coaches, like even my high school coach, you know, Coach Engel down in Florida, I go down there with the family and everything, and Coach Engel is there and showing up and talking in his crazy way. I've been blessed, but guys like Tommy Tuberville exist. He's not the only one. I have my suspicions about Dabo Swinney, right? And, you know, you can see some of it. Nick Saban is a guy that I had the pleasure of meeting, being recruited by. I haven't, crossed paths since he recruited me. But Nick Saban is another one of those guys who is a hard ass, but I absolutely believe that, like, he can name every player. And I'm willing to bet that if I did cross paths with him, with a few little reminders, he probably would remember me. Coach Trussell. I never played for Coach Trussell, and I love that man. You know what I mean? Because
I mean, Youngstown guy.
Right, he's a Youngstown guy. And, like, Coach Trussell recruited me 20, 25 years ago. And when I came, when I met him and talked to him about what our company was doing, he gave us office space at Youngstown State University, right? A guy I'd never played for. And before that, I called him, you know, when I was in college working with some youth at a halfway house. I called him when he was at Ohio State, and he came and brought those kids gear. And a couple of those kids, he ended up getting scholarships for. Like, Coach Trussell is an amazing dude. So being a football coach does not mean automatically asshole, idiot, and, you know, why guys play for him is part of it is just the culture of what you expect. But Tommy Tuberville is, I think he's an embarrassment for the coaching profession, for the college coaches, and I think he's an embarrassment as a senator.
I'm not going to defend Tommy Tuberville, obviously. You know, but what you're saying, it rings true to me. I mean, you know, my college athletic career was as a cheerleader. So I was around stuff, and Don Nealon was the head coach when I was there, and Don Nealon was kind of a bumpkin. I mean,
country bumpkin.
His assistant coach, a guy named Donnie Young, I have no trouble. That guy, he had that look that he was constantly surprised.
Yes.
Like, always. Have you met him?
Yeah.
Okay. So I
got recruited by them.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah,
Donnie Young looked like he was constantly in the state of surprise.
Right.
Guy is a fucking moron. He's probably dead now. I don't know.
Because he was older when I was getting recruited.
Yeah, I mean, and he was there when I was there in the early 90s.
Yeah, and they were recruiting me in the mid to late 90s.
Anyway, I can't believe we're talking about Donnie Young. But at the same time, I'm talking to this guy like, I'm a college junior. And I'm looking at you as an adult in a position of authority going, how did you get here?
Right.
How did you stay here?
Yeah.
And Tommy Tuberville, however he worked his way up the chain of command, good for you. You made it. Again, head coach of Auburn is a big position.
Look, I mean, they won a lot of games. He was a good coach, but, I mean, he's also
he was a successful coach.
Right, he was a successful coach. Nealon recruited me, too, and that was...
Don Nealon was a nice guy, but he was a total... bumpkin.
Duts.
Yeah. All right. I don't know how we ended up down this road.
So, I mean, let's just go into football. You know, a little light on the political stuff today. There's a lot more we could talk about as it relates to some of our conflicts, Israel and Gaza, Russia and Ukraine.
That's still going on, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I'll always try to bring up Russia and Ukraine because you can't ignore it. But what's happening in Gaza, I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum. And you know, as hard as it is for us to talk about, like it's 1,000 times harder for the people who are living it. We acknowledge and own that. But I think, you know,
what you're saying is totally legit, and yet we can't do it justice, right? What's happening in the lives of people in Gaza, in Ukraine, we can't comprehend. As fucked up as things might be
America, you know what we talked about last week with the flower massacre is just it's just brutal. And the one thing I will say about it is that Biden got caught on a hot mic, and he gets caught on a hot mic, and he says, "You know, me and Bibi, we're gonna have a come to Jesus moment." And I busted out laughing because it's like, you're going to have a come to Jesus moment with the leader of Israel,
who's a Jewish,
because them and Jesus get along.
This is why, okay.
Like, what do we do? Like, I mean, and now look, on the one hand, like, great, you do need to have that conversation with BB. you need to push them for a ceasefire. You know, and I hope you get it, but I just couldn't get past the fact that they were gonna have, he's gonna have a come to Jesus moment with the leader of the Jewish state. Okay.
I didn't hear that.
Like, you're off to a great start, Joe.
I'm not mad that I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing about it now.
I intentionally didn't tell you for this reason, because I was like, there's no fucking way this dude said that, but he did. And, you know, so Joe Biden with the fumble.
That's like a self. It's like the Mark Sanchez butt fumble. You fumbled. You picked up the ball, so you stayed on. All right, right. No,
you didn't lose a ton of yards. No, you didn't lose the ball, but it's just
there's no good sports analogy for this.
It's just like, come on, Joe. But you know, like, look, and he's got.
But
like,
here's your alternative, fucking psycho ass Trump. So what you gonna do?
Yeah.
And to stay on that topic for one more minute, it is literally for. I mean, I'm much more dyed in the blue Democrat than you are. Mm-hmm. Not that I have voted for Republicans, but for the most part, I lean left. But this is the ultimate example of what's your alternative. Mm-hmm. And as much as you might not like Joe Biden, as much as I might not like Joe Biden, the alternative is so bad that there's just no... Like, and the real concern I have is how much does how awful Biden is and how awful Trump is make voter turnout collapse? Because the reason Biden won in 2020 was massive voter turnout.
I mean, I think it's not the issue that Biden will have is that if you don't get a ceasefire before the election, I think he's got problems with Israel and Gaza, even if they get a ceasefire. You know, if that ceasefire comes late August, October, right? Because everyone's like, you could have done this before, right? So I think even if they get one, I think a ceasefire is months away if you are able to negotiate one. And I hope, and I say this legitimately, I hope and pray I'm wrong and it comes sooner. But I think in reality, it's not. We're not going to see that till the summer. I think by then it will help him, but I don't think by a ton. And you're going to get people saying, "Why didn't we do this sooner?" Because I don't think it happens without us at the table. You know, but I think he does have some legitimate issues. Obviously, the age. And I think the instability in the Middle East, along with what's going on in Russia, Ukraine, those could pose as issues that they're going to have to overcome. But I think that this will be more, and again, it will be more about keeping Trump out. You know, I think you're going to have a lot of people that are going to be like, that guy just can't get back into the White House. I think that is going to impact voter turnout. I think in a way that you get more of it because, yeah, I don't like either, but I think you'll have a lot of people who are just saying, I can't deal with the insanity that is Trump.
You brought up Nikki Haley running independently. I don't see that happening.
No, I don't.
I don't see Robert Kennedy Jr. potentially doing that.
Yeah.
And I think he will take more votes from Trump than he will from Biden.
I probably agree, it'll be curious to see how it plays out because there's plenty of reason to be turned off by RFK, starting with his
voice. We talked about voice. This. Yes, I know.
I mean, I know. And look, it matters because you know what people first hear and see is going to impact. You know, Kennedy also has some other issues with just kind of, you know, like I never want to knock somebody for working out, but he's kind of weird with the whole workout thing, and
I don't even know.
He follows a lot of like female fitness accounts, and you know, like there's a lot of comments from him from his official account, like "woo, smoking hot, looking good," and it's just like, why does that matter? Because somebody's gonna use that if he runs, you know, like, and some people are gonna be turned off by it. Like, dude, you're 60 years old, hitting on, you know, leaving comments and smiley faces with their tongue hanging out and with heart eyes and flames on some 20-something-year-old fitness count, which is fine if you're, you know, gym in Ohio. It's a different thing if you're running for president. You know, like, so.
Why did it have to be me?
Because I was staring at you. You know, like, you're closer to him in age than I am. So
I am. Okay. You're not wrong.
Like, people are going to
look.
Kind
of an asshole.
But look, people like me, you, or Robert Kennedy commenting on some young 21-year-old girl's fitness account.
I mean, if I'm commenting on Livy Dunn, who is a fucking bombshell, that could be pretty creepy pretty quick.
Yes, exactly. And so for me too, I'm 43, right? Like, I'm 20 years older than these girls. So me commenting on, you know, now.
You're also a fitness guy.
Yeah, and some of these people I actually know. I was just at the Arnold and made friends with a girl who's a very well-known fitness person. We followed each other on IG. But my comments are typically, you know, related to the actual workout or the actual movement that they're doing and not like, hey, your ass looks great, right? I can just say that to myself and not type it so that everyone in the world
can
see it.
Yeah, that's something people should know not to do. Like, you can think it, you can be right, but you don't need to broadcast it to the fucking world.
But, you know, look, I mean, what do I always say? Like, you know, like, everyone deserves a voice. Social media gives everyone that voice. Not everyone should use it the way that they do, right? And, you know, that's kind of our problem with our politics right now is that everyone has a voice. Everyone thinks that that voice matters. They have their opinions, and they're often not rooted in fact or reality or this planet, and they get broadcast and they get amplified.
From a creepiness perspective, you know, Joe Biden has had his moments where he's sniffing hair and whatever. Okay, Donald Trump walked into Miss Teen, whatever the thing it was, and is like around barely clothed teenagers.
Some of the stuff he said about his own daughter is
creepy. Oh my god. You know what? In addition to Mark Milley and John Kelly, I'm playing that. What do you have in common with your daughter? I was going to say sex. Okay, no father says that. None. Zero. None. No one who isn't an absolute fucking creep says that. Yeah. All right. Let's talk football, and then we got to talk Tyson and Paul.
Yeah, I mean, football. There was an interesting story. It didn't get a lot of traction, but Braylon Edwards. Did you see the story?
I saw the story. Basically what I understood was someone was beating up an old man, and Braylon Edwards basically choked the guy out.
Yeah, like this guy at a grocery. I think it was at a grocery store. Or somewhere, some retail store. Two customers. One was an elderly man. I think the man was in his 80s.
I heard he, yeah.
And, you know, some young other patron slams the old guy's head on the counter. Braylon Edwards is nearby. Braylon Edwards comes and saves the day, you know, chokes the guy out who's trying to beat this old man to death. Braylon Edwards, if you don't know who he is, he played at the University of Michigan. He played for the Browns and the Jets. He was a pretty good receiver. You know, he had a big profile here in Cleveland. He goes on to the Jets. Yeah, again, solid career, big playmaker. Yeah. Interesting now, again, because my nephew is at Michigan. It's so weird because I talk so much shit about Braylon Edwards in Michigan at the time. But, you know, I wanted to highlight the story because good for Braylon Edwards for stepping in so many times. You know, you see these horrible things happen and everyone's pulling out a phone and taking pictures and recording video, doing everything but fucking actually helping the person that is being attacked, assaulted, what have you. And Braylon Edwards doesn't go to his phone. He actually does what you should do, which is go and stop the terrible thing that is happening. Now, he didn't, like, it wasn't like the subway guy who killed the guy, you know, and choked him out. But,
right.
You know, so, you know, like, this one should be a relatively...
And we defended I defended the subway guy.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and this is a situation where, you know, good for Braylon Edwards, you know, and there's so many of these stories where, I mean, there have been, you know, NFL players, college players that have pulled people out of accidents and burning cars. There have been, you know, NFL players that have administered life support, you know, through CPR and everything with someone choking or something like that, jumped in and saved a kid that was drowning. And I think those stories are important to highlight because the media, you know, ESPN, Fox, like, they're going to sit there and focus on the guy who gets picked up for the DUI or the guy who gets the domestic violence charge or what have you. And if you're going to do that, then you need to talk about when these guys do good. And this is a situation where a retired NFL player with a big profile does something good, completely selfless, doesn't go on a media tour to talk about it, just does it and is just like, all right, I'm going to take my shit. I'm going to be on my way. And, you know, those are stories worth telling.
And it's not without risk on his part, right?
Oh, absolutely.
He gets involved in this, and if he does think,
Yeah, something could go wrong.
The guys, anyone who's beating up an 80-year-old man in a fucking grocery store...
is not stable.
Is not stable. Could very well be jacked on... Who knows what?
Right.
You know, you grab a hold of him, he might cack out.
Could have a weapon.
Have a heart attack and die.
Yes.
And now you're the bad guy because you killed someone. Well, I'm saving a life. And if this psycho is doing his thing and I stop it, you know, I'm putting myself in danger personally,
professionally, criminal, exactly. Everything else. But, I mean, and he did it. And yeah. And that's
so something good came out of the University of Michigan, which is not expected. That was cheap. I'm sorry.
But you know, moving into the world of football, right? Like, so we're officially in silly season, right? Like, free agency hasn't opened yet. We've already had the NFL Combine, and so all the rumors are coming out. As a Steeler fan, it's frustrating because I've had a steady quarterback for 18 years in Ben Roethlisberger. And then we drafted Kenny Pickett, so it, you know, we thought there was some stability, but Kenny didn't perform all that well. So now it's every free agent quarterback, and even some free agent quarterbacks that aren't free just yet. Kirk Cousins, right? And I've got a beef with Kirk Cousins. My beef with Kirk Cousins.
I love that you have to deal with this. You have no idea how beautiful this is for me, because you and I have had a Kirk Cousins conversation for 5 years or more. It's like, why does this guy not get a bigger chance? Do you want him? Well, no. And when the Bills were struggling to find a quarterback,
I think the same thing. Kirk Cousins' arc is interesting, right? So he gets drafted in the same draft as Robert Griffin III.
Right, to the same team.
Right? Like, so they take RG3 first, and then they took Kirk Cousins, I want to say, in like the fourth round. Right, out of Michigan State, and RG3 has this amazing rookie year, but then he gets hurt. Kirk Cousins comes in, and then Kirk Cousins, like, RG3 never really gets his juice back. Kirk Cousins ends up being a above-average good quarterback for the Redskins. You know, plays his way into a monster contract there, you know, short-term, but a whole lot of money up front. And then, you know, he leaves Washington, goes to Minnesota, same thing, couple massive contracts there. I think Kirk Cousins has made, like, $200 million over the course of his career as a fourth-round pick, which is wild. And then, and now he's a free agent again. He's coming off of a torn Achilles. And, you know, he got, you know, like, any available quarterback has been slated as a good fit for the Steelers. Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, you know, talking about trading for Justin Fields. You know, my preference would be keep Kenny, try to bring back Mason Rudolph, and then I would bring in Jacoby Brissett, who's a free agent in Washington. Jacoby Brissett is a guy who's been around. You know, I think he was initially taken by the Patriots, got traded to the Colts, was down in Miami, and then played really well for
NC State, right?
Yeah, out of NC State, played well for the Browns, and then he ends up in Washington last year. Came in to relieve Sam Howell, who just got his ass beat because their offensive line was terrible. Jacoby Brissett, every time he's played, has played pretty well. You know, not great barn burner, but not terrible. And he's a guy that I think could come into the Steelers offense with our new offensive coordinator, play really well, run the ball heavy, be able to throw the ball downfield, make accurate passes, not make a ton of mistakes. But, you know, Russell Wilson, I know, was in Pittsburgh. I don't like that. He's old. He doesn't play within the offense. He's not as athletic as he was. I think he's an upgrade over Kenny Pickett for sure. I don't know if he's an upgrade over Mason Rudolph.
That's a bold statement.
Yeah. And then, you know, or I wouldn't go Russell Wilson if I had to bring in somebody new. Like I said, I would bring in Brissett, but I think you make the trade for Justin Fields because I think you can get him for a third and maybe a conditional fifth round pick next year, or you may be able to get him for like a fourth and a fifth this year. Anything along those lines, I would probably do that trade. He's more athletic than both Pickett and Russell Wilson at this point in his career. And he's got the same issues that Kenny Pickett has throwing the ball in the pocket, right? So, you know, either one of those guys is going to benefit from a strong run game and going off play action, limited number of reads. You know, here's your read down the middle of the field. Here's your read to the sideline. And here's kind of like your bailout outlet pass, you know, after we, you know, do the run fake. And then you pass off the run game, which Matt Canada didn't do. I think that benefits both Pickett and Fields. So I think either one of them is going to play better in Pittsburgh this coming year based off what Pittsburgh has already done. Now, that leaves Chicago with who they're going to draft. They're talking about Caleb Williams. I got to be honest. I actually watched some of Caleb Williams' games late while I was like smoking a cigar at the shop. Was able to pull up the NFL, get on the big TV and everything, and was able to go through and watch some of the games with USC, or not NFL, with the college football package that I have. And here's my issues with Caleb Williams. First of all, things he's good at. Dude is crazy accurate. He's got a cannon of an arm, and his ability to make plays outside of the pocket is fucking wild, at his given his age, experience, all that other stuff. I mean, he throws deadly accurate passes and plenty of zip on the ball, and he just knows how to make plays out of nothing. What he doesn't do is he does not throw out of the pocket, and when he does, it's not great. He doesn't throw on schedule. He doesn't throw on rhythm, and that will be a problem in the NFL. C.J. Stroud did that very well at Ohio State. It transfers to the NFL. I think his game is closer to Kyler Murray's, even though he's a different physical, he's got a different build. I would put his game closer to Kyler Murray's, which could still be successful, but it's going to lead to a lot of turnovers, especially early. And I think you can get him there, but I think it's more of a project than people realize. I don't know if I'm taking him first. Right, but I think Chicago is set on that. I haven't been able to break down Drake May or Daniels out of LSU just yet, but I will, and I'm doing it because I've got a nephew who's a tight end who is trying to get into the NFL. So I'm trying to go through all 32 teams and their potential quarterback situations, including some of the rookies going in. So that is a whole other part-time job that I am not getting paid for that I've taken on.
So it's fair. So when it comes to Russell Wilson, I'm a bit surprised that you're as down on him as you are, because he got sacked 100 times over the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that until I read it like a couple days ago. But he's not a statue. He's a mobile quarterback who's good at avoiding pressure, and he got sacked 100 times with that being the case. So his O-line must have sucked.
So there's a couple things. One, I will say Nate Hackett, I think, is not the offensive coordinator that people think he is. I think he has a job because his dad is Paul Hackett. And he was good. He's good with Aaron Rodgers. I think Nathaniel Hackett is a buffoon. I think Sean Payton...
I don't have to coax that out of you too hard.
Sean Payton is a good coach. Sean Payton seems to be kind of a dick. But I think Russell Wilson just doesn't, like, he's not great at reading defenses, and he's better at making plays with his legs. The problem is that Russell Wilson is 34 years old. He's older. He's taken a lot of hits. He is not the same athlete that he was. I mean, I think we both agree that Justin Fields, if you need a quarterback who can run, I'd rather have Justin Fields than Russell Wilson at this point in his career. Russell Wilson is going to, he threw for 26 touchdowns and 8 interceptions last year, which the Steelers over 2 years have thrown for 24 touchdowns. So he is an upgrade. I agree. He is an absolute upgrade over Kenny Pickett for sure. I still don't know about Mason Rudolph, though. I think Mason Rudolph might end up being a pretty good quarterback if someone gives him an actual chance. Him and Jacoby Brissett may be in a similar boat in that regard, right? Where you're not really sure why people don't like him as a starter, but like you've seen enough to say, I think he could be. I need to see him for a full season. You know what I mean?
And Jacoby Brissett is a funny case because he's succeeded in multiple places, and at times he's been good, very good.
He was good with the Browns. I mean, like the Browns issue with him.
But the Colts too, though. Didn't he leave the league and shit? Expert analysis by Jeff. Didn't he leave the league and shit?
He's had moderate success, right? Like, I think his record is about even, and he may have lost more games than he's won. His touchdown interception ratio is, he's got more touchdowns than INTs, and the INTs have come down the last couple of years. But I like him because I think, again, he can, if I can't keep Mason Rudolph, I definitely want to have a Jacoby Brissett. My point being is that I think Mason Rudolph might be good, but Russell, I know what Russell Wilson is right now. Right, I don't know what Mason Rudolph is.
And Russell Wilson is not a long-term solution.
He's not, right? Solution. Like, so again, if I'm bringing in somebody new, I would rather bring in that Justin Fields guy, have Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph. If Mason Rudolph goes and gets an opportunity to play somewhere else, then I might say, all right, give me Kenny Pickett, Justin Fields, and Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill knows Arthur Smith's offense because Arthur Smith was Ryan Tannehill's offensive coordinator in Tennessee. There wouldn't be a huge expectation of Tannehill to play. I think he could be a good mentor. I think you let the three of them battle it out, see who wins it, whether it's Mason Rudolph or it's Justin Fields or Kenny Pickett, whoever wins, you let them win. You have Ryan Tannehill as the backup. And, you know, whatever. I think there's a lot of different combinations as it relates to the Steelers. Your Buffalo Bills, who
signed Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah, they did sign Mitchell Trubisky. Thank you. So I never have to see him play for us again. And he probably won't have to play for the Bills because
I hope he never sees. Because I mean, Josh Allen's a fucking stud. Mitchell Trubisky
dude's a tank. Like, I liked Josh.
Josh Allen
before you did.
Yeah. Oh.
And then when you guys drafted him, I said you got your guy, and
was not convinced.
Even through the first couple seasons, I was like, you got your guy. And you're like, I need to see more. I'm like, okay, well,
he's a monster. No,
and so
physically, he's as gifted as anyone in the league. Yes, he's there with Mahomes.
Right. I mean, he's look. I mean, he's. I put him up there with Ben Roethlisberger in terms of talent, and he's more athletic than Ben. Even though y'all do not remember Ben in his young days with him running the ball and everything else. But, you know, the Bills had to offload, you know, $40 million of salary, and you're still over the cap. White, Jordan Poyer,
Mitch Morse.
Yeah, Mitch Morse, your center, who we talked to. I don't think we're going to sign, though, because I think we're going to draft a young guy. You know, there's still more to come. I mean, there's, you know, you're
they're going to restructure Josh's deal. They'll restructure Steph Diggs' deal, and they'll get under the cap by Friday.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they mortgaged the future for their shot the last couple of years, and they restructured Von Miller's deal, who took a pay cut. They had to do it. We got to wrap it up soon, and I want to talk about Tyson Paul.
Yeah.
So you and I traded text. You sent me the text that this happened, and I said, please let this happen. Your response to me was, it's not about hating Jake Paul. For me, it's about hating Jake Paul. I do not like the Paul brothers. They're loudmouth, annoying douchebags. And I mean, you and I are both fans of Mike Tyson. We watched Mike Tyson fight Roy Jones Jr. a couple years ago in my living room. We consumed some cannabis.
Yep.
Not nearly as much.
So did Snoop. Holy shit.
You texted me and it was like, what do you remember about that fight other than the fight? I'm like, the fucking
massive blunt.
42 ring gauge blunt. Am I wrong?
And that thing was probably 8 inches long. It was massive.
So Snoop comes out and just blasted this joint that you and I both were sitting there like, oh my God.
Like if I hit that thing one time, I would have been on the floor. It was ridiculous. But yeah, so this fight, like, now look, here's the thing with Jake Paul, right? Like, the dude understands how to market, right? And sure. So that much I have to respect. And he has, you say what you want about him, he's taking boxing seriously, right? Like, I mean, he's training, he's fighting. Now look, you look at some of the people he's fought, like, he's taken, like, you can argue that he did it smart, right? He fought people with similar experience levels than him. He's gone up in terms of levels of experience. He fought Tommy Fury's younger brother and lost to him, right? In a decision, it was like 6-1. He's also fighting who's willing to fight him. I think, you know, like a Canelo's not going to fight him, right? It's not worth it for, you know, one of these high-level boxers to really get in the ring with them at this point. If they lose to him, well, if they win, okay, so what? So I think it's a combination of him understanding the marketing, but then also taking what he can get, and, you know, there's some gamesmanship in there in between. This fight with Tyson, though, is a different monster. Now, we'll see what this fight is. You know, if it's just an exhibition, it's only going to go three rounds or something like that, similar to the Roy Jones Jr. fight. Okay, now, that being said, I think, you know, Tyson's training for it. And I also, but, you know, Tyson and Paul have a relationship. Okay, so this is, you know, like they've done some marketing things together. I think they knew that they were going to put this fight together. I don't know. You know, so I don't know what to expect. I really don't. But what I do know is that Mike Tyson's got more knowledge about boxing than everyone that Jake Paul has fought to this point and Jake Paul combined in, like, one hand, right? Like, so people are like, well, Tyson's old. Like, listen, Tyson, people forget Tyson as a defensive boxer. We all remember the knockouts. But he was a smart defensive boxer. He knows how to not get hit. And that doesn't go away. He may not be as fast as he was, but I'm telling you, I've watched this dude train recently at the age of 57. He ain't as fast as he was, but he's still more than anything Jake Paul has seen in the ring, right? So Mike Tyson at 80% today, whatever his 100% is today, Mike Tyson at 80% of that today is still more than anything Jake Paul has seen in the ring. And I don't think he'll hurt Jake Paul in a way that we don't, you know, like the kid has brain damage. But he's going to give him some real body shots that kid has not felt, right? And what did Roy Jones Jr. say after that fight? Hey, Roy, how you feeling? I'm hurt.
Yes.
You see who I was in the ring with? You know?
So I think that, so the Paul brothers typically have fought MMA fighters in boxing matches who were not great strikers and were typically smaller than them. Tyson is a big man. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, as a heavyweight, he wasn't a big heavyweight. He typically fought around 210. But he was one of the most savage punchers ever.
Yeah, and I mean, I think right now, I think Jake Paul is like 6 foot, 6'1". Mike Tyson is 5'10". I think Tyson is a little heavier, a little older.
Around 220, 230 right. Probably.
I think I saw the stats, and like Tyson, I think is like 10 pounds heavier. Jake Paul has more reach, but that's never been an issue with Tyson in the past.
If Tyson wants to win this fight, when he fought Roy Jones, no disrespect to Roy Jones, he took it easy on him.
Yes.
It was an exhibition fight.
Yes. Snoop and I think it'll be similar, but Roy Jones, I mean, again, Roy Jones was another one of those guys, really good fighter, more experience, all that other stuff. Like, Jake Paul isn't Roy Jones Jr.,
Roy right. Jones Jr. is one of the greatest fighters of all time.
Yes.
Period.
So Jake Paul is not. Like, he's right. Like, he's, look, I don't want to take.
He's coming.
I'm annoyed by kind of the process, right? Like, you're getting paid big money right out of the gate. That's annoying. But once you get over that, I'm not going to get in another man's pocket. God bless him. Because if I could do it, if someone wanted to pay me $10 million to fight somebody other than Mike Tyson.
I was going to say,
right?
Like, are you willing to fight Mike Tyson?
Other than Mike Tyson.
For $10
million. For $10 million, I would, but I like.
But you know I was going to go. You're physically 50 pounds bigger than Mike Tyson. And you are physically stronger than Mike Tyson, and he would knock you out in a minute.
He would murder me. But I would, for $10 million, I would get in the ring with Mike. But I would fight. Look, if someone wanted to pay me to get in the ring to fight anybody in any format, like, I don't care. You want to go MMA? Fine, I'll do it. So I can't knock Jake Paul for that because he's, you know, like, because
paid,
he can,
sure.
Right? Like, go get paid. And once you get past that, it's like, all right, like, he's in there, he's fighting people, he's training, he's taking it serious. Now, he may be fighting people that, like, he had multiple fights where the person was like, they took the fight a couple weeks before, didn't train for it, whatever. So I think this will be different. Like, I mean, he fought Tommy Fury's younger brother, who is a legitimate boxer. He lost that in a decision 6-1. If this is a real fight, right? I mean, and Tyson wants to win it, Tyson is going to win it. The question is, I don't think Mike in his old age, is the same killer that he was, but it's still in there. But I think that he'll keep the tiger caged, give the kid a bunch of body shots, and then, you know, they'll go off and sell something together.
I don't think people appreciate how much a body shot hurts. Having delivered and received body shots in a ring, it's a whole different thing. You're getting punched in the head sucks. I'm not going to deny that.
It all sucks, but like those body, because those body shots, you still feel them after.
And they stay with you the entire fight. And here's the thing. I don't think Mike Tyson will take it lightly. And this is a total boxing cliche, but it's also 100% true. The last thing you lose is power. So, you know, if Jake Paul or anyone can make it essentially a cardio contest, being 57 years old matters. Yeah. But power is still there. And Larry Holmes showed in his old age, and George Foreman showed in his old age, the power is still there.
B-hop.
And when you get your body just crushed with it doesn't even need to be a clean shot. You can be covered up. I'm demonstrating with my elbow. Like getting punched in the elbow and having that jammed into your rib cage by Mike fucking Tyson will end most normal humans.
Right.
And Jake Paul is going to have to deal with that.
So it's in June. It's on Netflix.
We will watch it together. Yeah, we will probably consume some cannabis. Hope Snoop Dogg shows us up again.
Worst case scenario, I'll just throw in some Snoop between fights and we'll just do our thing.
Deal.
For shizzle dizzle.
Let's wrap this up. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram, X, and whatever the fuck the other platforms are. And we're done.
Classy.
Yeah, I'm classy as fuck.